on the freeway. Every story is a variation on a single theme. This shouldn't be happening. I shouldn't have to experience this. God is unjust. Life is unfair. People new to the work sometimes think, I don't know what to write. Why should I do the work anyway? I'm not angry at anyone. Nothing's really bothering me. If you don't know what to write about, wait. Life will give you a topic. Maybe a friend didn't call you back when she said she would, and you're disappointed. Maybe when you were 5 years old, your mother punished you for something you didn't do. Maybe you're upset or frightened when you read the newspaper or think about the suffering in the world. Put on paper the part of your mind that is saying these things. You can't stop the story inside your head, however hard you try. It's not possible. But when you put the story on paper and write it just the way the mind is telling it, with all your suffering and frustration and rage and sadness, then you can take a look at what is swirling around inside you. You can see it brought into the material world in physical form, and finally through the work you can begin to understand it. When a child gets lost, he may feel sheer terror. It can be just as frightening when you're lost inside the mind's chaos. But when you enter the work, it is possible to find order and to learn the way back home. It doesn't matter what street you walk down. There's something familiar. You know where you are. You could be kidnapped and someone hides you away for a month and then throws you blindfolded out of a car. But when you take off the blindfold and look at the buildings and streets, you begin to recognize a phone booth or a grocery store, and everything becomes familiar. You know what to do to find your way home. That is how the work functions. Once the mind is met with understanding, it can always find its way back home. There is no place where you can remain lost or confused. The Judge Your Neighbor Worksheet. After my life changed in 1986, I spent a lot of time in the desert near my home, just listening to myself. Stories arose inside me that had been troubling mankind forever. Sooner or later, I witnessed every concept, it seemed, and I discovered that even though I was alone in the desert, the whole world was with me. And it sounded like this. I want, I need, they should, they shouldn't, I'm angry because, I'm sad, I'll never, I don't want to. These phrases, which repeated themselves over and over in my mind, became the basis for the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. The purpose of the worksheet is to help you put your painful stories and judgments into writing. It's designed to draw out judgments that otherwise might be difficult to uncover. The judgments you write on the worksheet will become the material that you'll use to do the work. You'll put each statement, one by one, up against the four questions and let each of them lead you to the truth. You're about to hear a completed Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. I've written about my second husband, Paul, in this example, included here with his permission. These are the kinds of thoughts that I used to have about him before inquiry found me. As you listen, you're invited to replace Paul's name with the appropriate name in your life. Number one, in this situation, who angers, confuses, saddens, or disappoints you, and why? I don't like Paul because he doesn't listen to me about his health. Two, in this situation, how do you want them to change? What do you want them to do? I want Paul to see that he is wrong. I want him to stop lying to me. I want him to see that he is killing himself. Three, in this situation, what advice would you offer them? Paul should take a deep breath. He should calm down. He should see that his behavior frightens me. He should know that being right is not worth another heart attack. Four, in order for you to be happy in this situation, what do you need them to think, say, feel, or do? I need Paul to hear me when I talk to him. I need him to take care of himself. I need him to admit that I am right. 5. What do you think of them in this situation? Make a list. Paul is unfair, arrogant, loud, dishonest, way out of line, and unconscious. 6. What is it about this situation that you don't ever want to experience again? I don't ever want Paul to lie to me again. I don't ever want to see him ruining his health again. Tips. Statement 1. Be sure to identify what most upsets you in that situation about the person you are writing about. As you fill in statement 2 through 6, imagine yourself in the situation that you have described in statement 1. Statement 2. List what you wanted him or her to do in the situation, no matter how ridiculous or childish your wants were. Statement 3. Be sure that your advice is specific, practical, and detailed. Clearly articulate, step by step, how he or she should carry out your advice. Tell him or her exactly what you think he or she should do. If they followed your advice, would it really solve your problem in statement 1? Be sure that your advice is relevant and doable for this person, as you have described him or her in statement 5. Statement 4. Did you stay in the situation described in statement 1? If your needs were met, would that take you all the way to happy? Or would it just stop the pain? Be sure that the needs you have expressed are specific, practical, and detailed. Inquiry. The 4 questions and the turnarounds. 1. Is it true? Yes or no? If your answer is no, move to question 3. Question 2. Can you absolutely know that it's true? Yes or no? 3. How do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? 4. Who would you be without the thought? And turn the thought around, then find at least 3 specific, genuine examples of how each turnaround is true for you in this situation. Now, using the 4 questions, let's investigate the statement from number 1 on the worksheet. Paul doesn't listen to me about his health. As you listen, think of someone you haven't totally forgiven yet. Someone who just wouldn't listen to you. Number 1, is it true? As you consider the situation again, ask yourself, is it true that Paul doesn't listen to me about his health? Be still. If you really want to know the truth, the honest yes or no from within will rise to meet the question as you recall that situation in your mind's eye. Let the mind ask the question and wait for the answer that surfaces. The answer to question 1 or 2 is just 1 syllable long. It's either yes or no. Notice if you experience any defense as you answer. If your answer includes because or but, this is not the 1 syllable answer you are looking for, and you're no longer doing the work. You're looking for freedom outside yourself. I'm inviting you into a new paradigm. 2. Can you absolutely know that it's true? Consider these questions. In that situation, can I absolutely know that it's true that Paul isn't listening to me about his health? Can I ever really know when someone is listening or not? Am I sometimes listening, even when I appear not to be? 3. How do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? How do you react when you believe that Paul doesn't listen to you about his health? How do you treat him? Be still. Notice. For example, I feel frustrated and sick to my stomach. I give him the look. I interrupt him. I punish him. I ignore him. I lose my temper. I start talking faster and louder, and I try to force him to listen. Continue your list as you witness the situation, and allow the images in your mind's eye to show you how you react when you believe that thought. Does that thought bring peace or stress into your life? What images do you see, past and future? And what physical sensations arise as you witness those images? Allow yourself to experience them now. Do any obsessions or addictions begin to appear when you believe that thought? Do you act out on any of the following? Alcohol, drugs, credit cards, food, sex, television, etc. Also, witness how you treat yourself in this situation and how that feels. I shut down. I isolate myself. I feel sick. I feel angry. I eat compulsively. And for days I watch television without really watching. I feel depressed, separate, resentful, and lonely. Notice all the effects of believing the thought, Paul doesn't listen to me about his health. 4. Who would you be without the thought? Now consider who you would be in that same situation without the thought, Paul doesn't listen to me about his health. Who, what, or how would you be in the same situation if you didn't believe that thought? Close your eyes and imagine Paul apparently not listening to you. Imagine yourself without the thought that Paul doesn't listen to you, or that he even should listen. Take your time. Notice whatever is revealed to you. What do you see now? Notice the difference. Turn it around. The original statement, Paul doesn't listen to me about his health, when turned around becomes, I don't listen to myself about my health. Is that turnaround as true or truer? Now identify examples of how you don't listen to yourself about your health in that very same situation with Paul. Find at least 3 specific, genuine examples of how this turnaround is true. For me, one example is that in that situation, I was out of control emotionally, and my heart was racing. Another turnaround is, I don't listen to Paul about his health. Find at least 3 examples of how you were not listening to Paul about his health, from his perspective, in that situation. Are you listening to Paul when you're thinking about him not listening to you? A 3rd turnaround is, Paul does listen to me about his health. For example, he put out the cigarette he was smoking. He might light another one in 5 minutes, but in that situation, even as he was telling me that he didn't care about his health, he was apparently listening to me. For this and for each turnaround you discover, always find at least 3 specific, genuine examples of how the turnaround is true for you in this situation. After sitting with the turnarounds, you would continue a typical inquiry with the next statement written on the worksheet. In this case, I want Paul to see that he is wrong, and then with every other statement on the worksheet. The turnarounds are your prescription for health, peace, and happiness. Can you give yourself the medicine that you have been prescribing for others? Your turn, the worksheet. Now you know enough to try the work. First relax, get very still, close your eyes, and wait for a stressful situation to come to mind. Fill in the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet as you identify the thoughts and feelings that you are experiencing in the situation you have chosen to write about. Use short, simple sentences. Remember to point the finger of blame or judgment outward. You may write from your point of view as a 5-year-old or at any age in your life. Please do not write about yourself yet. 1. In this situation, who angers, confuses, saddens, or disappoints you, and why? Remember, be harsh, childish, and petty. I don't like blank because. 2. In this situation, how do you want them to change? What do you want them to do? I want blank to. 3. In this situation, what advice would you offer them? Blank should, blank shouldn't. 4. In order for you to be happy in this situation, what do you need them to think, say, feel, or do? I need blank to. Your turn. The inquiry. One by one, put each statement on the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet up against the 4 questions. Then turn around the statement you're working on and find at least 3 specific, genuine examples of how each turnaround is as true as, or truer, than the original statement. You can also find help at thework.com or with the Work app, which includes a tutorial. Throughout this process, explore being open to possibilities beyond what you think you know. There's nothing more exciting than discovering the don't know mind. This work is meditation. It's like diving into yourself. Contemplate the questions. Drop down into the depths of yourself. Listen, watch, and wait. The answer will meet your question. No matter how closed down or hopeless you think you are, the gentler polarity of mind, which I call the heart, will meet the polarity that is confused because it hasn't yet been enlightened to itself. You may begin to experience revelations about yourself and your world, revelations that can transform your whole life forever. Take the time now to give yourself a taste of the work. Look at the first statement that you have written on your worksheet. Now ask yourself the following questions. 1. Is it true? When asking the first question, take your time. The answer is either yes or no. If it's no, move to question 3. The work is about discovering what is true from the deepest part of yourself. It may not coincide with anything you've ever considered before. But when you experience your own answer, you'll know it. Just be gentle, sit with it, and let it take you deeper in. There are no right or wrong answers to these questions. You are listening and watching for your answers now, not other people's, and not anything you have been taught. This can be very unsettling at first because you're entering the unknown. As you continue to dive more deeply, allow the truth within you to rise and meet the question. Be gentle as you give yourself to inquiry. Let this experience have you completely. 2. Can you absolutely know that it's true? This is an opportunity to go deeper into the unknown, to find the answers that live beneath what we think we know. All I can tell you about this realm is that what lives beneath the nightmare is a good thing. Do you really want to know the truth? If your answer to question 2 is yes, you can simply move on to the next question, but you may find it useful to pause and rewrite your statement in order to uncover your interpretation of it. Often it is the interpretation, which may be hidden from you, that causes you pain. 3. How do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? Make a list. How do you treat yourself? How do you treat the person you've written about when you think that thought? What do you do? Be specific. Make a list of your actions. What do you say to that person when you think that thought? List the things you say. How do you live when you believe that thought? List how each reaction feels physically inside you. Where do you feel it? How does it feel? Tingling, hot, etc.? What is the self-talk that goes on in your head when you think that thought? 4. Who would you be without the thought? Close your eyes and wait. Imagine yourself just for a moment without the thought. Imagine that you didn't have the ability to think the thought as you stand in the presence of that person or in that situation. What do you see? How does it feel? How is the situation different? List the possibilities for living your life without this concept. For example, How would you treat that person differently in the same situation without the thought? Does this feel kinder inside you? Turn it around. To do the turnarounds, find opposites of the original statement on your worksheet. Often a statement can be turned around to the self, to the other, and to the opposite. First, write it as if it were written about you. Where you have written someone's name, put yourself. Instead of he or she, put I. For example, Paul doesn't listen to me about his health, turns around to, I don't listen to myself about my health. Find at least three specific genuine examples of how this turnaround is as true as or truer than your original statement. Then continue with, I don't listen to Paul about his health. Another type is a 180-degree turnaround to the extreme opposite. Paul does listen to me about his health. Don't forget, for each turnaround, find at least three specific genuine examples of how the turnaround is true for you in this situation. This is not about blaming yourself or feeling guilty. It's about discovering alternatives that can bring you peace. You may come to see three or four or more turnarounds in one sentence, or there may be just one that feels true for you. The turnaround for statement number 6 on the worksheet is different from the usual turnaround. We take the statement and replace I don't ever want to with I am willing to, and then I look forward to. For each turnaround, go back and start with the original statement. For example, he shouldn't waste his time, maybe turned around to I shouldn't waste my time. I shouldn't waste his time. And he should waste his time. Note that I should waste my time and I should waste his time are not valid turnarounds. They are turnarounds of turnarounds rather than turnarounds of the original statement. Consider whether or not the turned around statement is as true as or truer than your original statement. For example, let's play with the statement, Paul should be kind to me. The turnaround, I should be kind to myself, does seem as true as or truer than the original statement, because when I think that Paul should be kind to me, I get angry and resentful and I cause myself a lot of stress. This is not a kind thing to do. If I were kind to myself, I wouldn't have to wait for kindness from others. I should be kind to Paul. That too is at least as true as the original statement. When I think that Paul should be kind to me, and I get angry and resentful, I treat Paul very unkindly, especially in my mind. Let me begin with myself and act as I'd like Paul to act. As for Paul shouldn't be kind to me, that is certainly truer than its opposite. He shouldn't be kind because he isn't. That's the reality of it. The inquiry continued. Now it's time for you to apply the four questions and the turnarounds to the rest of your judgments, one at a time. Read all the sentences you have written on your Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. Then, one by one, investigate each statement by asking yourself, 1, is it true? 2, can I absolutely know that it's true? 3, how do I react? What happens when I believe that thought? 4, who would I be without the thought? And turn it around. Then find at least three specific, genuine examples of how each turnaround is true in that situation and in your life. If your first experience of the work doesn't seem to work for you, that's okay. Just move on to the next chapter or try filling out a worksheet on a different person and come back to this one later. Don't worry about whether the work is working or not. You're just beginning to learn how to do it. It's like riding a bike. All you need to do is keep wobbling on. You'll get a better feel for it as you listen to the dialogues that follow, and you won't necessarily be the first to notice that it's working. You may find, as many people have, that it doesn't seem to have any effect now, but you have already shifted in ways you can't feel yet. The work can be very subtle and profound. Everyone is a mere image of yourself, your own thinking coming back at you. Chapter 3. Entering the Dialogues. In reading the dialogues in this book, it's important to understand that there is no essential difference between what the facilitator does in these examples, it happens to be me, and what a person doing the work alone does. You are the teacher and healer you've been waiting for. This book is designed to help you do the work by yourself. It's not necessary to work with a facilitator, though it can be very powerful. It can also be useful to watch someone else do the work with a facilitator and, as you watch, to look inside for your own answers. Participating in this way helps you learn how to question yourself. Many of the following chapters contain dialogues with men and women doing the work. These are edited transcripts of conversations taped during workshops that I have given over the past year or two. At a typical workshop, several participants volunteer to sit with me, one by one, in front of the audience and read what they have written on their Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. Then they are guided into the power of the four questions and the turnarounds, and thus into their own self-induced realizations. I have discovered that in every language and every country I have visited, there are no new stories. They're all recycled. The same stressful thoughts arise in each mind one way or another, sooner or later. That's why anyone's work can be your work also. Listen to these dialogues as though they were about you. Don't just hear the workshop participants' answers. Go inside and discover your own. Get as emotionally involved and as close to them as you can. Discover where and when you have experienced what you're hearing. You'll notice that I don't always ask the four questions in the order you've learned. I sometimes vary the usual order. I leave out questions, zeroing in on just one or two, and sometimes I skip the questions entirely and go directly to the turnarounds. Even though the usual order of the questions works well, eventually it may not be necessary to ask them in order. You don't have to begin with, "Is it true?" You can start with any question. Who would you be without that thought? Might be the first one if that feels right. Just one of these questions can set you free if you inquire deeply from within. After you do the work for a while, the questions will become internalized. But until this happens, the deepest shifts happen when you ask all four questions in the suggested order and then apply the turnarounds. That's why I strongly recommend that those new to the work stay with this form. Sometimes I also ask two subsidiary questions. Can you see a reason to drop that thought? And can you find one stress-free reason to keep the thought? These are follow-ups to the third question, how do you react when you think that thought? They can be very useful. When I feel it's appropriate, I'll help someone find the story that is the real cause of their suffering and that may be hidden from their awareness. This may involve looking more deeply at the original statement to find the statement behind it. Or it may involve shifting the inquiry from the written statements to a painful statement that they've just spontaneously made. When you do the work on your own and a new painful thought or deeper story appears, you may want to write it down to include in your inquiry. Sometimes I'll share my own answers to a question, or I'll tell a personal story. Please understand that I'm speaking from my own experience and that my answers are not intended as suggestions for how you should live. The work does not condone any harmful action. To hear it as justifying anything that is less than kind is to misinterpret it. If you find anything in the following pages that sounds cold, uncaring, unloving, or unkind, I invite you to be gentle with it, breathe through it, Feel and experience what arises in you. Go inside yourself and answer the four questions. Experience inquiry for yourself. Listen to these dialogues as if they were your own. Go inside for your own answers. Get as emotionally involved and as close to them as you can. Discover where and when you have experienced what you're hearing. If you can't relate to one of the following examples, try substituting someone who is significant in your life. For example, if the participant's issue is with a friend and you substitute the word husband, wife, lover, mother, father, or boss, you may find that his work turned out to be your work. We think we are doing the work on people, but actually we're working on our thoughts about people. You can write an entire worksheet on your mother, for example, and later find that your relationship with your daughter has dramatically improved because you were attached to the very same thoughts about her, though you weren't aware of it. The work allows you to go inside and experience the peace that already exists within you. That peace is unchanging, immovable, and ever-present. The work takes you there. It's a true homecoming. If I had a prayer, it would be this. God, spare me from the desire for love, approval, or appreciation. Amen. Chapter 4. Doing the work on couples and family life. My experience is that the teachers we need most are the people we're living with now. Our spouses, parents, and children are the clearest masters we could hope for. Again and again, they will show us the truth we don't want to see until we see it. After I returned home from the halfway house in 1986, with a radical different understanding of the world and of myself, I found that nothing my husband or my children did could upset me. Inquiry was alive inside me, and every thought I had was met with a wordless questioning. When Paul did something that would have angered me before, and the thought, "he should," appeared in my mind, all I felt was gratitude and laughter. The man might have been walking on the carpet with mud all over his shoes, or dropping his clothes everywhere, or shouting at me, waving his arms, his face red. And if "he should" appeared in my mind, I just laughed at myself. Because I knew what it led to. I knew it led to, "I should," "he should stop screaming," "I should stop screaming" mentally about him, before I remind him to take off his muddy shoes. I remember sitting on the living room couch with my eyes closed, and Paul came into the room and saw me, and he stormed up to me shouting, "Jesus Christ, Kate, what the hell is the matter with you?" It was a simple question. So I went inside and asked myself, "What the hell is the matter with you, Katie?" It wasn't personal. Could I just find an answer to that question? Well, there had been one instant when I'd had the thought that Paul shouldn't have been shouting, though the reality was that he was shouting. Ah, that's what was the matter with me. So I said, "Sweetheart, the matter with me is that I had the thought that you shouldn't be shouting, and it didn't feel right. Thank you for asking. Now it feels right again." During those first few months, my children would seek me out and tell me what they really thought of the woman they'd known as their mother. Things they would have been punished for saying before. For example, Bob, my older son, trusted me enough to say, "You always favored Ross over me. You always loved him the most." Ross is my younger son. And I was finally the mother who could listen. I went inside with it and got still. Could this be true? Could he be right? And since I had invited my children to speak honestly, because I really wanted to know the truth, I found it. So I was able to say, "Honey, I see it. You're right." I was very confused. I felt such love for him as my teacher who had lived through all that pain, and such love for the woman who thought she preferred one child over another. People often ask me if I had a religion before 1986, and I say yes, it was. My children should pick up their socks. This was my religion, and I was totally devoted to it, even though it never worked. Then one day, after the work was alive in me, I realized that it simply wasn't true. The reality was that day after day, they left their socks on the floor, after all my years of preaching and nagging and punishing them. I saw that I was the one who should pick up the socks if I wanted them picked up. My children were perfectly happy with their socks on the floor. Who had the problem? It was me. It was my thoughts about the socks on the floor that had made my life difficult, not the socks themselves. And who had the solution? Again, me. I realized that I could be right, or I could be free. It took just a few moments for me to pick up the socks without any thought of my children, and an amazing thing began to happen. I realized that I loved picking up their socks. It was for me, not for them. It stopped being a chore in that moment, and it became a pleasure to pick them up and see the uncluttered floor. Eventually, they noticed my pleasure and began to pick up their socks on their own without my having to say a thing. Our parents, our children, our spouses, and our friends will continue to press every button we have until we realize what it is that we don't want to know about ourselves yet. They will point us to our freedom every time. I want my son to talk to me. In this dialogue, a mother comes to understand her son's apparent neglect. When she realizes that her sadness, resentment, and guilt have nothing to do with him and have everything to do with her own thinking, she opens the possibility of change for herself and also for her son. We don't have to wait for our children to change before we can be happy. We may even come to discover that the very situation we dislike is what we've been looking for, the entrance into ourselves.
I am angry at Christopher because he stopped contacting me and doesn't invite me to meet his family. I am saddened because he doesn't talk to me.
Good. Continue.
I want Christopher to talk to me from time to time, to invite me to meet him, his wife, and his kids. He should stand up to his wife and tell her that he doesn't want to exclude his mother, and he should stop blaming me. I need Christopher to accept me, to accept my way of life, and I need him to understand that I did my best. Christopher is a coward, resentful, arrogant, and rigid. I don't ever want to feel him rejecting me or not contacting me anymore.
Okay, so we'll take some of these thoughts to inquiry now. At this point, we're going to take a look at our thinking, ask for questions, and turn it around, and see if we can find some understanding. So let's begin. Read the first statement again.
I'm angry at Christopher because he stopped contacting me and doesn't invite me to meet his family.
Is that true? Is that really true? Just answer yes or no, sweetheart. There's no trickery in these questions. It's not better if you answer one way or another. This is simply to go inside for yourself and see what's really true. And maybe to go inside again under that and under that. He doesn't contact you or invite you to meet his family, is that true?
Well, sometimes.
Good. Sometimes is more honest because you've just revealed that he does invite you. He doesn't invite you to meet his family, is that true? The answer simply is no.
I see that.
And how do you react when you think the thought?
It makes me totally tense. My mind is agitated every time the phone rings.
Can you see a reason to drop the thought? He doesn't invite me to meet his family. And I'm not asking you to drop it. Just simply, can you see a reason to drop this lie that argues with reality?
Yes.
Give me a peaceful reason to keep this story. A reason that doesn't cause you stress.
I can't find one.
Let's work with the thought, I want my son to call me. I can tell you my experience, that I don't ever want my sons to call me. I want them to live the way they want to live. I want them to call whoever they want to call, and I love that it's often me. It wasn't always that way. Who would you be without the thought, I want my son to call me? I want him to invite me into his family, whether he wants to or not.
I would be a person who could breathe and enjoy life.
And you'd be intimate with him, with no separation, whether he visits you or not. Intimate with him in here, in the heart. Let's turn this first statement around.
I'm angry and saddened at me because I stopped contacting me.
Yes, you've been mentally living in your son's business. So you've traded yourself for the dream of how your son should live. I love my sons, and I'm sure they can run their lives at least as well as I could run their lives. They need to see me. I trust that they're the best judges of that. If I want to see them, I let them know, and they say yes or no honestly. That's it. If they say yes, I love it. If they say no, I love it. There's nothing I can lose. That's not possible. Can you find another turnaround?
I'm saddened because I don't talk to me.
You don't talk to you. You're mentally over there running his business, and then you're feeling all the loneliness of that, the loneliness of not being here for yourself. Okay, now read your next statement.
I want Christopher to talk to me from time to time, to invite me to meet him, his wife, and his kids.
You want him to invite you to meet his wife and children. Is that really true? Why do you want to be with them? What do you want them to do or say?
What I actually want is for them to accept me.
Turn it around.
What I actually want is for me to accept myself.
Why burden them with something you can give to yourself?
And what I really want is for me to accept them the way they live.
Yes, with or without you. And I know you can do it because you thought they could do it so easily. This tells me you know the way. If they invite you, they will accept you. Can you absolutely know that that's true?
No.
So how do you react when you believe the thought?
It's horrible. It gives me a headache and tension in the shoulders.
So you want them to invite you and accept you, and then you'll have what?
For a few minutes, I guess I'll have something. Then when I leave, it's the same story.
You go there, and what do you get?
A kind of satisfaction.
Yes. You tell the story of how they invited you, and the story makes you happy. Or you tell the story of how they don't invite you, and the story makes you sad. Nothing is happening but your story. And yet you believe that it's their action or non-action that causes your emotions. You're deluding yourself with your own uninvestigated thoughts in their name, bouncing off the walls, happy, sad, happy, sad. It's their fault I'm happy, it's their fault I'm sad. This is confusion. Let's look at the next one.
He should stand up to his wife.
Is that true? Does he?
No.
How do you react when you think that thought?
It's horrible. It makes me suffer.
Yes, because it's not true for you. Christopher, make war in your home and win so that I can come in. That's not what we want from our children. And then it moves into, he's a coward. We haven't stopped to investigate. Maybe what you perceive as his not standing up to his wife is really courage. Maybe it's love. Can you see a reason to drop the thought he should stand up to his wife?
Yes.
Yes, internal war is a reason. Internal war makes external war. Who would you be without this thought?
Less angry.
Yes, you might even see that you have a courageous, loving son who does what he knows to do with a peaceful family, even though he has a mother who thinks he should stand up to his wife. How do you treat him when you think that thought? Do you give him the look, just to let him know that you think he's a coward or doing it wrong? Let's look at the next one.
Am I going to survive this up here?
Well, hopefully not.
Hopefully not.
This work is the end of the world as we understand it to be, sweetheart. and it's the opening to reality as it really is, in all its beauty. What is already true is much better without any plan of mine. I'm so glad of that. My life is so simple now that I no longer rule the world in my mind. And my children and friends are very grateful. Let's look at the next statement.
He should stop blaming me.
He should stop blaming you. Is that true? Now you want to control his thinking. Even who he should blame.
Oh, God.
You want to take over your son's whole mind. You know what's best for him. You even know what he should be thinking. Excuse me, Christopher. Don't think unless I've told you what to think. Don't think until I want you to. And then let's work on your wife. And by the way, I love you.
Oh, I knew it.
So read it again.
He should stop blaming me.
He blames you. Is that really true?
No.
How do you react when you believe that thought?
Ugh, it kills me.
And what's the worst thing he could say to blame you? What could your children say about you that you don't want to hear?
You weren't a good mother. You aren't a good mother.
Can you find it? Can you find a place where you feel you didn't do what a good mother should do?
Yes.
If one of my sons said to me, "You're not a good mother," I could honestly say, "You know, sweetheart, I can find that. I travel all over the world. I'm hardly ever physically there for you and my grandchildren. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. What do you suggest?" My sons and I have everything in common. They tell me what I may not have realized for myself. I look inside myself to see if they're right, and so far, they always have been. It's simply a matter of my going deep enough into the truth to find it. I can go outside and attack them and their ideas about me and the attempt to change their minds and keep my lack of awareness. Or I can go inside and search for a new truth that will set me free. This is why I say that all war belongs on paper. Inquiry takes me to the answers inside. And when my children tell me, "You're a wonderful mother," I can go in and find that too. I don't have to go out to them and say, "Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you," and live my life proving it. I can just go in and find I'm a wonderful mother, and that I don't have to diffuse it by doing all that thank you stuff. I can sit with both my sons, wordlessly, with tears of joy just streaming down our cheeks. Love is so big that you can die in it, die of self, and be fully consumed in it. It's what you are, and it will have all of you back to itself again. So simple. My sons are always right. My daughter is always right. My friends are always right. And I get to realize it or suffer. All of it. I am everything they say I am. And anything I feel I need to defend keeps me from full realization. So, sweetheart, let's turn that around.
I should stop blaming him.
Yes, work on that. It's not his job to work on that. He's providing for his family. This stop blaming thing is your philosophy. It's for you to live. This will keep you very busy and out of his business. And that's where life begins. It begins from where you are now, not from where he is. Let's look at the next statement.
I need Christopher to accept me, to accept my way of life.
Stop your life, Christopher, and accept my way of life. Is this what you really need? Is this true?
No, it really isn't true.
Turn it around. I need me.
I need me to accept him and his way of life. That feels much better.
Yes, his way of life. He has a wonderful family life. He doesn't invite you with all your concepts into his life to make war with his wife, to have to appreciate you and...
Ooh.
He sounds like a very wise man.
He is.
You might call him and thank him. Thank you for not inviting me. I haven't been someone you would really want to have around, and I understand now.
Yes, I can see that.
And you might also let him know that you love him and that you're working on unconditional love. So, sweetheart, there's another turnaround?
I need to accept myself, and I need to accept my way of life.
Yes, give him a break and know that it's for you to accept your way of life. I know it's a very simple matter for you to accept it, because you expected him to do it just like that. Let's look at the next one.
I need him to understand that I did my best.
Is that true?
No.
How do you react when you believe this fairy tale?
I'm hurt and angry. I feel like I'm in hell.
Who would you be without this story of victimhood? It's the story of a dictator not having her own way. Here's the dictator. You should tell me that I did the best that I could do. It's crazy. What would you be without this sad, sad story?
I would be a free, joyful being.
Now that's very exciting. You would already be what you wanted him to see you as. A mother who did her best at the time and is loving her son now. He could never know who you really are anyway. It's not possible. I say skip the middleman and be happy and free from where you are right now. Once we start doing that, we become so lovable that our children are attracted to us. They have to be. The storyteller's mind, the projector of the story, has changed. So what you project as a world has to change. When I am clear, my children have to love me. They have no choice. Love is all I'm able to project or see. The whole world is simply my story, projected back to me on the screen of my own perception. All of it. Let's look at the next one, sweetheart.
Christopher is a coward.
Is that true? My goodness, look who he's been up against. A tiger. A mother tigress.
Oh, a tigress. Oh, yes, that's true. Well, he did a good job from the very beginning.
You may want to share that with him. He's a coward. Turn it around.
I am a coward.
Yes, you use him for your happiness. But he's not going for it. He's a brilliant teacher. We all live with the perfect teacher. No mistake. Let's look at the next ones and turn them around.
He's resentful. I am resentful. He's arrogant. I am arrogant. He's rigid. I am rigid.
Yes, we've been confused for a while, that's all. Just a little confusion here and there, nothing serious.
I've been waiting for this for so long, to stop the confusion.
I know, Angel. We have all wanted this for so long. It's time now. Let's move to the next statement.
I don't ever want to feel him rejecting me.
Turn it around. I'm willing to feel.
I'm willing to feel him rejecting me.
Each time he rejects you, if you still feel pain, you can realize that your work's not done. And he is the master. He will continue to reject you until you understand. You are responsible for not rejecting him or yourself. Take it to inquiry and give yourself your freedom.
I look forward to feeling him reject me.
It's good that it hurts. Pain is the signal that you're confused, that you're in a lie. Judge your son, write it down, ask for questions, turn it around, and realize whatever pain is left.
Okay.
You are the solution to your problem, your apparent problem. No mother or son has ever done harm. We're dealing with confusion here, that's all. Through this work, we come to realize that. My husband's affair. Marissa was obviously upset when she came up on the stage to sit with me. Her lips were quivering, and she looked as if she was on the brink of tears. Watch how powerful inquiry can be if someone sincerely wants to know the truth, even though she is in great pain and thinks she has been terribly wronged.
I'm angry at David, that's my husband, because he keeps saying he needs time to sort things out. I want David to express what he is feeling when he is feeling it, because I'm tired of asking, and I'm too impatient to wait.
So, husbands should express what they're feeling. Is that true?
Yes.
And what's the reality on this planet?
Well, basically, they don't.
So how do I know that husbands shouldn't express their feelings? They don't. Sometimes. That's reality. Husbands should express their feelings is just a thought that we believe without a single piece of evidence. How do you react when you believe this lie? Can you hear where I'm coming from when I call it a lie? It's not true that he should express his feelings because the truth is that he doesn't, in your experience. This doesn't mean that he's not going to fully express his feelings in 10 minutes or in 10 days, but the reality is that right now, it's not true. So how do you react when you think this thought?
I'm angry and hurt.
Yes. And how do you treat him when you believe the thought that he should express his feelings and he doesn't?
I feel like I'm prying. I'm demanding something.
I would drop the I feel like. You pry and demand.
But I... Oh, yes. That's exactly what I do.
And how does it feel when you pry and demand?
It doesn't feel good at all.
Can you see a reason to drop the thought? And please don't try to drop it. My experience is that you can't drop a thought because you don't make it in the first place. So the question is simply, can you see a reason to drop the thought? Often, very good reasons can be found in your answers to question 3, how do you react when you think that thought? Each stressful reaction, anger, for example, or sadness, or distancing, is a good reason to drop the thought.
Yes, I can see a reason.
Give me a stress-free reason to believe the thought that husbands should express their feelings.
A stress-free reason?
Give me a stress-free reason to believe this.
I really don't know how to...
Give me a reason that doesn't cause you pain or stress to believe the thought, my husband should express his feelings to me. How many years have you been married?
17.
And for 17 years, according to you, he hasn't expressed his feelings. Give me a stress-free reason to believe the thought. It could take you a while to find one.
Yes, I can't find a stress-free reason.
And who would you be living with this man if you didn't believe this lie?
I would be a happier person.
Yes. So what I'm hearing is that your husband is not the problem.
Yes, because I'm the one who pries and demands.
You're the one who believes this lie that hurts you so much. I hear from you that if you didn't believe it, you'd be happy. And when you do believe it, you pry and demand. So how can your husband be the problem? You're trying to alter reality. This is confusion. I'm a lover of reality. I can always count on it. And I love that it can change too. But I'm a lover of reality just the way it is now. So read that statement again about what you want him to do.
I want David to express what he is feeling when he's feeling it.
Turn it around. I want me.
I want me to express my feelings. But that's what I do all the time.
Yes, exactly. That's for you to live. It's your way, not his.
Ah, I see.
You're the one who should express her feelings because you do. He shouldn't express his because he doesn't. You go through the house prying and demanding, fooling yourself with this lie that your way is better. How does it feel to pry?
It doesn't feel good at all.
And you're feeling bad in his name. You're blaming it on him.
Exactly. I see what you're saying.
You feel bad and believe that he's doing it. And all the time, it's your own misunderstanding. All right, let's look at the next statement.
I'm tired of asking, and I'm too impatient to wait.
You're too impatient to wait. Is that true?
Yes.
And are you waiting?
I guess I am.
I would drop the I guess.
I am waiting, yes.
You're too impatient to wait, is that true?
Yes.
And you are waiting?
Yes. And I don't know how to stop it.
So you're too impatient to wait, is that true? You are waiting. You're waiting. I heard it from your own lips.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Got it?
Yes.
Yes. You're not too impatient to wait. You're hanging in there 17 years, 18 years.
Yes.
So how do you react when you think the thought that you're too impatient to wait? How do you treat him when you believe that lie?
I don't treat him well. I close him off. I scream at him sometimes, or cry and threaten to leave. I say some pretty nasty things.
So give me a stress-free reason.